translation and purport by His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. During the period for offering oblations to the demigods, one should invite only two brahmanas, and while offering oblation to the forefathers, one may invite three brahmanas, or in either case, only one brahmana will suffice. Even though one is very opulent, he should not endeavor to invite more brahmanas or make various expensive arrangements on those occasions. Purport. As we have already mentioned, Srila Advaita Acharya, during the generally observed ceremony for offering oblation to the forefathers, invited only Haridas Thakur. Thus he followed this principle. Name bhaktas chaturvedi madbhaktya swapara panchapriya. The Lord says, it is not necessary that one becomes very expert in Vedic knowledge before he can become become my bhakta or a devotee. Even if one is born in a family of dog eaters, he can become my devotee and be very dear to me in spite of having taken birth in such a family. Therefore, offerings should be given to my devotee, and whatever my devotee is offered, whatever my devotee has offered me should be accepted. Following this principle, one should invite a first-class brahmana or a Vaishnava, a realized soul, and feed him while observing this Harada ceremony to offer oblations to one's forefathers. Om Jnana Chamandandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshusun Miltam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvaseisa Sannavadi Pakshacha Desatarine Vancha Kalpatrubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Vyacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnabhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Ghor Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we are continuing this chapter where instructions by Narada Muni is given to the instructions for the perfect civilized human being. So really speaking, In the scriptures, especially Srimad Bhagavatam, is giving complete information about how to become a perfect person through all these wonderful instructions of great personalities like Narada Muni. Now, Narada Muni is actually considered one who has achieved full perfection. If you understand, if you go back to the story of Narada Muni, he was one of the Gandharvas, and somehow, due to some situation, he had fallen down and taken birth on this planet in a very low family of a maid servant. But his good fortune was that his mother was very much attached to serving the devotees of the Lord, especially those who are observing Chaturmasya in the forest, where the sages would gather in one place for 4 months, and their only business during those 4 months is to be absorbed in discussing the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. So while they were discussing the subject of Bhagavatam, Narada's mother would serve all the sages there. And after they have taken their prasadam and they go back into their little quiet place where they're again discussing the subject of Bhagavatam, she would clean it all up. And whatever remnants of prasadam is left, she would take that for herself and her son. And this continued. And Narada, being also part of that service to the Vaishnavas, the saints, he also got blessings of the Lord. And because of that, he became the son of Brahma as Narada Muni. And Prabhupada explains that he was re-established again in his rightful position. And of course, through his endeavors and his understanding, he became a perfect person. And therefore, here he is instructing the subject of how to become perfect. In the previous chapters, we saw how Narada Muni is instructing how to become a perfect brahmachari, how to become a perfect grihastha, perfect vanaprastha, perfect sannyasi. Now here, in this chapter, he is giving us a general instruction how to become a civilized human being. Now what is considered a civilized human being? We may debate that, because that again depends on one's perspective. If you go from the Vedic point of view, then it is very clear, a civilized person is one who understands the Supreme Lord and he worships him with full faith and devotion. And while worshipping the Lord with full faith and devotion, he develops all the wonderful qualities. Just like in Nectar Devotion, 26 principal qualities of pure devotees are mentioned. So one would develop these qualities. And because you have these qualities, then you would be considered a perfect gentleman. But in the rest of the world, what is considered a civilized person is what we see around us. In the Western concept, that you know you are living in a facility where you have all the modern mods and cons, you have technology, you are dressed nicely. Although these days we see, Prabhupada actually was sometimes very impressed, you know, during the time when he was in India, when the British Raj was there, when the English gentleman was dressed very nice and very clean. So Prabhupada said, that's something which is appreciated because it is a gentlemanly dress. But nowadays we don't see that so much as a gentlemanly dress. You know, in terms of men, they wear these denim jeans which are ripped apart in different parts of the leggings and exposing the body and a jacket and the hairs are sticking all over the place. And they have piercing all over the eyebrows and the nose and then the lips and the whole body. That is considered very civilized. And the ladies, if you look at the tradition, even in the Western concept, you know, they were head to toe, they were dressed with decent clothing. Now, the lesser the clothes you wear, the more civilized you are. You know, if you, I hope none of you go to any of those fashion shows, but you generally, you know, living this world, sometimes it is not possible to be sheltered from all these kind of things, especially when you go in the city and you know, you are doing your business, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Jare Dekho Tare Kaho Krishna Upadesh, giving everybody the mercy of the Lord through distributing the literature or doing Harinam or Dishmukhsaram. You see all these many showcases all over the place with mannequins dressed in very funky clothing. And they are considered very, very civilized. And then your eating habits, you know, that if you eat very, very what is considered high-class food in the Western society, you know, it's like the delicacy of like caviar or veal, which is the meat of a newborn calf. They considered it is very, very suave and sophisticated and very civilized. But according to the Vedic culture, that is considered the most low class in every aspect. So here we'll go more on the basis of what Vedic scriptures are advising us is what is a civilized person. And first and foremost, a civilized person is one who recognizes his position. What is his position? And of course, if we read the scriptures by the scriptural knowledge and by the saintly persons who have understood the scriptures and they give you discourses on the scriptures to explain to you the higher knowledge, which very clearly says that our position is one of insignificance. We are an insignificant little spark who by the grace of the Lord has achieved this particular body. And this particular human body is a rare occurrence according to the scriptures. After 8,004,000 species of life, one would get a human body. And what is the purpose of that human body? Not to abuse the human body, but to utilize that human body as a Lord's grace upon us, to facilitate us to engage in the service of the Lord. And that service is to offer the Lord all different kinds of worship and rituals which are purifying the heart so that we can understand the real self. Otherwise, we are going to be grossly engaged in material sense enjoyment and thinking that this is the highest enjoyment in the material world. But everybody who tries to enjoy in this material world miserably fails. I was listening to one lecture by Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said in that lecture that it seems everybody is very happy and content. Then after that, Prabhupada asked, are you all happy and content? And a lot of the audience, they sort of nodded their heads and said, yes. And Prabhupada said, you are all lying. Because we are all suffering from adibhautik, adidevik, adiatmik. None of us are exempted from that. So as long as you are in the material world, these three forms of miseries will be there. Whether we like it or we don't like it. You know, adidevik, by natural calamities, are going to affect you. There is not a place on this planet Earth where you can go where the influence of adidevik is not there. If you go to the Himalayas thinking, I will go to a more secluded place, which is very pure, very clean, uncontaminated. But if up there in the Himalayas, you'll be faced with severe weather, freezing cold, ice cold wind blowing and ice all around you. You think you will go to Bahamas, a nice, beautiful island. You know, you picture yourself, you know, white sands, coconut palms swaying in the wind, crystal clear blue ocean water. And you think, wow, this is wonderful. You go there and all of a sudden you get a tornado coming through. What happens? Your illusion is broken, thinking this is perfection. So there is no perfection in any way. No, adidevik will influence you. Adibhautik will also influence you because you are surrounded by many, many living entities. And they are all going to be cause of your pain. You know, Prabhupada explains that even a mosquito is going to cause misery for you. Every time he bites you, you become very uncomfortable because it creates a lot of itch in your body. And beyond that, it leaves some kind of viruses in your body which manifest into disease of malaria and so many problems. Now you say, well, mosquito is fine. I will get a mosquito spray and I make the place very clean. So then there is no mosquitoes. I'm quite happy. And they're thinking, my family is the dear and loved ones. But they are also a cause of your misery. Everyone will see. Your children will be cause of your misery. Your dear one, you know, your loving wife is going to be a cause of misery for you. But then, it's not just the wife is a cause of misery for the man, but the man is also cause for the misery for the wife. So this is adibhautik. You are causing misery for each other. Although, you know, you want to live in a very affectionate and loving spirit, but it doesn't happen. Recently I was reading one statistics and they say that the majority of those people who have got married out of love marriage, you know, they meet each other, they court and they fell in love and then their next stage is get married. And you would think that they understand each other and then they should be living very happily ever after. But the highest amount of divorces is in that group. Now, if someone had forced a partner upon you through arranged marriage, you would think, okay, somehow, you know, I was forced into this situation from social pressures, peer pressure, society, and so many other norms of the society we're living in. And it may not be compatible. Then you may say, okay, this is the cause because we were forced to be together. But when you go willingly and pair up together, and then you have problems, who are you going to blame? Adibhautik. This is going to be in this material world from every level. There is that. And then there's adiatmic. You may make some arrangements of some level of security from adidevik and adibhautik. And what about adiatmic? The mind. You cannot get rid of the mind. It is part and parcel of you. And the mind is the most troublesome. It gives you most difficulties. It will always be the cause of problems. So as long as we are here, then we will be having difficulties. So that is why instructions like from great saintly persons like Narada Muni advise us how to be free from all these things simply by understanding who you are. And once we actually understand our real position, who we are, then we have to act on that platform. Now many times we hear and we read from the Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures, Jivera Swarupa Hoi Nitya Krishnadas. Eternally we are servant of Krishna. And devotees, when they are preaching, they say, well, you know, you are servant of Krishna. So when we are preaching to people and saying, look, you are servant of Krishna, therefore you must serve Krishna. But it doesn't just mean that we are preaching to the person who has to become a servant of Krishna. You yourself have to become servant of Krishna. Because if you yourself don't understand the meaning, what is to be a servant of Krishna, how are you going to teach others to be a servant of Krishna? And the very word servant means one who serves. And whose servant are you? You are servant of Krishna. So we are supposed to serve Krishna and nothing else. So we have to then see from the scriptural instructions, from great saintly persons, from the spiritual master, they're all guiding and instructing us how to be engaged in the service of the Supreme Lord and serve Him in the spirit of becoming a true servant. And what is a servant's business? His business is to think how I can please my master. He's not thinking about anything else. Now, from the Ramayana, we can understand that Hanuman is considered the perfection of a servant. Because Hanuman, as soon as he met Lord Ramachandra, he surrendered himself in the spirit of servitude to Ramachandra. And from that moment onwards, he was all the time by the side of Ramachandra to make sure that every moment he's serving the Lord. And how he's serving? He's making sure that there is no inconvenience to Lord Ramachandra. He's not considering his own personal requirement. He's only considering the needs of Lord Rama. To the extent that from the morning when Ramachandra opens his eyes and wakes up, Hanuman is right there at his lotus feet, ready to serve him in every capacity. And all through the day he's serving him in all different capacities. Then at night, when Lord Ramachandra takes rest, Hanuman would go on the roof of the palace and he would be in vigilance to see that there would be nobody who would come and disturb the sleep of his Lord and Master. And the next morning as the sun rises, Lord Ramachandra is awake, he's back on duty. So he's not considering his own personal needs. He's only considering the needs of his Master. But now, one would say, well, you know, that would be a bit like a slave, you know. You're only serving the Master, but the Master is not, you know, and there's no time for your own personal needs and care. But scriptures are explaining very clearly. Krishna says, yatha mam prapayante. As you reciprocate with me, I will reciprocate with you. And Prabhupada explains that Krishna will do 10 times more for you than what you would do for him in terms of your rendering his service. So here, we don't read anywhere in the whole story of Ramayana that Hanuman was want of need or was suffering from lack of sleep. He was suffering from lack of food. He was taken care of by his Lord and Master. Because by being with the Supreme Lord, you automatically become self-satisfied. And you actually understand what is your real need. And when you understand what is your real need, then you will be properly situated. Because then you don't have any other requirements. Otherwise, as I said, adhyatmik, the mind will say, I need this, I need this, I need that. And then we make all these arrangements to try to fulfill those needs. Before we know it, we are lost in the material pool. We lose our sight of goal. And as we lose the sight of goal, then we distance ourselves from the Supreme Lord in terms of service. And the real spirit of service and understanding one's position is the more and more you engage in devotional service, the more and more you are hankering to serve the Lord. The more and more you chant the holy name of the Lord, more and more you practice the sadhana bhakti, your mood and your attachment becomes stronger and stronger to the Supreme Lord and serve the Supreme Lord. And that is a symptom to see that when you are having more and more stronger desire to serve the Supreme Lord, then it seems that you're making progress in your spiritual journey. But if you find that after many years of practicing Krishna consciousness, we become complacent in our execution of devotional service, and we take it for granted that, yeah, I'm a devotee now, so therefore I don't have to do so much, I'm already saved, then we are under illusion, because Krishna will fulfill whatever you want. So if you want to be free from that serious attachment to the Supreme Lord in service, in devotion, then the Supreme Lord will arrange that. So we have to be very, very careful in our execution of devotional service. And one of the principles is that as we are engaging in devotional service and become more and more eager and enthused to serve the Lord, that will be recognized by the body of Vaishnavas. And because the Vaishnavas see this, they will encourage you even more and more and more. And in this spirit, you'll always be happily situated, and somewhat you'll be shielded from adibhautik, adidevik, adikatmik. And you'll be properly situated, and you can go forward in your spiritual journey. Now, here in this particular verse, as we're discussing, that Advaita Acharya, he was concerned to follow the principles of Sarada ceremony. And as he was making preparations to make offerings and oblations to his forefathers, as Prabhupada mentions in the purport, that he followed the principles according to this verse, that he invited one Vaishnava and invited Haridas Thakur. And when he invited Haridas Thakur, he offered him all the wonderful service and honor to Haridas Thakur as he received him. And in further chapter, Prabhupada is mentioning that he served as good as God, because he is representative of the Supreme Lord. Why? Because he is perfectly situated at the lotus feet of the Lord, and he is a pure Vaishnava. So when you feed him, then automatically the forefathers whose oblation ceremony you are doing will get the benefit of it. Prabhupada says here, according to this principle, that it is not necessary requirement that if you are in a position that you have great wealth, that you show your wealth in all these pompous ceremonies and invite many, many people and do a grand ceremony of it. And in doing that, likelihood is that you will not receive everyone with proper honor, especially the brahmanas. And if you don't receive the brahmanas with proper honor and respect, then it is considered an offense to the Supreme Lord, because brahmanas are there as a representative of the Supreme Lord. So we even see in this material world that if someone is representing the state, the head of state, then he or she is offered the same respect as the head of state. Sometimes we see that in this country, the queen is the head of state, and she receives sometimes a member of a government from another country. And that person is not in the capacity of the head of state, either the prime minister or the president of that particular state, but he is his junior or his representative. But the queen will offer him the same respect and honor as the head of state, because he is considered non-different from the head of state in terms of his position. So similarly, a Vaishnava is considered in the same category, that when we receive a Vaishnava, he should be honored and respected in the same way, so that we offer that service to the Vaishnava. And when we are offering that worship and honor and service to the Vaishnava, that is considered that it is same as offering to the Supreme Lord. Which comes back to my original point, where I was saying that we should understand ourselves, what is our real position. Our real position is a servant of the Supreme Lord. Now, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also emphasizing this. Gopi Bhrata Kavalam Dasa Dasanu Das. They say you are servant of the servant of the servant. So he's emphasizing this very clearly. So here Advaita Acharya is inviting Haridas Thakur and is honoring and respecting and worshipping him in the same way as the Supreme Lord. And by doing that, he's actually performing the Sarada ceremony with perfection. And he's actually getting the result of the Sarada ceremony to feed the four fathers the oblations. And what is an oblation? It is the Mahaprasadam, which is offered to the Lord. It is offered to the four fathers simply for the purpose to deliver them from the further bondage of birth and death. And that is why in Vedic culture, all these ceremonies are there, because not everyone who takes birth is fortunate enough to be freed from the clutches of birth and death. Unless and until you become a perfect Vaishnava and situated in your devotional practice in a perfect way, then chances are that when you have to depart this material world, when your time is up in this particular material body, then you have to take rebirth. Now, that rebirth could be anywhere. It could be in this universe, could be another universe, it could be in a human body, it could be an animal body, it could be any, according to the deeds you have performed. So, in order to free those souls from those further bondage, then the Sarada ceremony is done, so that they get opportunity to take birth in a proper Vaishnava family, a devotee family, where then they get opportunity to go engage in devotional service and therefore continue their onward journey of going back to Godhead. Because Prabhupada keeps mentioning that our only business is to go back home, back to Godhead. And that is why in this chapter, Advaita Acharya is showing how he is fulfilling that one of the requirements of performing a Sarada ceremony by inviting a brahmana. And also it is mentioned here that either you invite one brahmana or two brahmanas. Now for offering oblations to demigods is two, and for four fathers is one. And why is that? Because if you invite more than one brahmana, you won't be able to take care of them according to how they should be taken care of. And therefore you will commit offense. And as soon as you commit offense to the brahmanas, the objective of offering brahmanas worship for the deliverance of the forefathers will be ineffective, because it won't be done in a perfect way. In other words, whatever ceremonies, whatever rituals we have to perform according to the scriptural injunction has to be done perfectly. If it's not done perfectly, then it won't have the desired result. So whatever we do, it has to be done perfectly. You know, in terms of yagyas, one of the things I observe personally myself is that Prabhupada, when he did fire sacrifices, he kept it very simple and very straightforward. Why? Because he showed by his own personal example, if you keep things very simple and straightforward, then there's no complication. And he can do that with more devotion. But if you try to make something which is very, very elaborate and very complicated, then chances are you may forget things in terms of the things, how it should be executed, in step by step. If it's not done in the right order, then it will not have desired results. So it may look very nice and very, very pakka when you do very elaborate ceremony, but if it's not done properly, then the desired results will not be there. So that's why Prabhupada said, keep everything very simple. Because he understands that in this day and age, we cannot do everything perfectly. So if you keep a very simple process, then everything, when we execute, it becomes perfect. And not to introduce anything new. Sometimes, we start introducing many different, things which we have seen around the world, where different Brahmana cultures are performing as well. I saw this when I was in South India, the Brahmanas are performing this, so we'll do that also, because it is a Brahmana thing to do. But that is not what is introduced by the Founder Acharya. Founder Acharya has given us a perfect formula to become a perfect devotee. And because if you follow that, then there is no question of having any difficulty in our execution of our devotional journey. But as soon as we get into all this complication, then it becomes difficult. One example I can give you, which in my own experience, that Srila Prabhupada, when he installed the deities of Radha Vrindavan Chandra in New Vrindavan, he advised devotees that maximum half an hour to dress the deities. Half an hour. But now we have introduced so many things in our worship of the deities that it takes more than half an hour. And we are more concerned with how the Lord will look on the altar rather than rendering service to the Lord. Because we are going from the real principle of serving the Lord and replacing that with our concocted ideas on how it should be done. You know, so I sometimes say that the real principle, by sticking simply to what Srila Prabhupada has given us, that will take us all the way back to Godhead. But if we try to introduce other things and concoct, then more likely it is that we will create offenses and also disturbance in our spiritual journey. You know, and one example is that when we dress in deities, we make the deities, you know, dress so nicely with all these ornamental decorations, and we stick all these pins all over the Lord, just that it looks nice. But in reality, if you were to dress like that, would you feel comfortable? Because remember, the Lord is a person. You know, he's not stone, statuette. He is a person. Now, if the Lord is a person and we are supposed to serve him as a person, is it not better to understand that here is the Supreme Lord. He has come in his transcendental form of this deity as a person. Would it be appropriate to dress him in such a way which makes him uncomfortable? Because surely, if you and I had to be dressed like that, it would be uncomfortable. So why would we expect the Lord to feel comfortable? Because he's a person, you're a person. So in other words, Srila Prabhupada introduced a process of Krishna Bhakti in a very simple way, but in a very realistic way, which will encourage and allow us to make advancement in our spiritual journey. And in terms of devotional understanding and in the devotional spirit, if we do that, then our execution of Krishna consciousness will be perfect. Otherwise, it will be all show, but no essence. And if there's no essence, then you may do it for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 50 years, and you'll still be in the same place as you started off. The only difference is that you have lost a lot of time. And time nobody has. Time is of the essence. Every second go past is gone, is lost. So that is why we have to be very much focused in terms of whatever time we have, whatever abilities have, whatever situation which allows and permits us to render devotional service. We should try and do it in as much as possible in the mood of understanding what the scriptures are directing us, and simply stick to that and not concoct anything external. Then we'll be happily situated. Because all of us, sometimes, due to different situations, you know, we cannot do everything perfectly, because being in this world, in this body, is imperfection in the best of times. So we have to do the best we can, as the statement goes, make a good use of a bad bargain. So whatever the situation we have, we try to make the best of that situation under the guidance of the scriptures and the spiritual master. And we will then reach perfection in our devotional execution, and there won't be any difficulty in our spiritual journey. And as we follow that steps, then slowly and steadily we will make advancement. And as we make advancement, we will feel much more connected with the Supreme Lord. And then we won't be looking elsewhere for our needs or our happiness, because Krishna is providing everything for us what is required to be perfectly situated. So I will stop here. Thank you very much.